You are listening to Let's Go, the weekly anime podcast about weekly anime from Dynamite in the Brain and Secret of the Sailor Madness. So come along and hang with the Let's Go gang. It's Dwayne.
Hello.
It's Niall.
Hey.
And it's me, Brian, stifling a burp, trying to get through the introduction while he was. On this episode, we are covering anime that aired the week of the 11th of May, all the way through to the 17th of May, 2020. And we are going to start, as we always do, with Super Shiro, episode 31, Having Fun Picking Mushrooms. In which, if you do the detective work, I think you could figure out what breed of dog Shiro is in this episode.
I thought he was a freeze, isn't he?
Yeah. I was going to say the dog my sister has, but nobody knows that.
See, I don't think it is, because there's a particular truffle hound, which bears a resemblance to him.
Okay. That wouldn't make sense.
I know what they are. Yeah, I saw him on one of the cooking programs at work, actually, where they go, I think it was Guy Fieri, actually, going to Italy, and they had one of these dogs.
Yeah, I think it's an Italian breed. Yeah, I
just cooked a whole dog.
My God. Oh, that was some serious burgers.
Legato Romagnolo, apparently. I don't think that's
that does sound Italian.
Mm. Pretty adorable.
Yes.
And also very, very smart.
Yes. They come in different colors.
Can they shrink you down in a long, protracted dance? I don't think so.
But they do have dense, curly hair, and they do come in white. And I was like, yeah, because, yeah, this week the bone is on the Mushroom Mountain in the 31st.
I didn't like the way he was going through. It was like, okay, all the family are away, so I can get away with this. And I was like, you wouldn't mention that if they weren't going to show up. <like this."
laughs> And there's Shiro-chan's mammy. She's often mountain picking mushrooms as well.
Because they're lacking funds, so it's mushrooms. As many mushrooms as you can eat.
Yeah, but an extra wrinkle. It's not just tickapoo he has to watch out for.
And, this time Misai does get to have some lines. She's not asleep in this episode. so they're skinned, so she's come up to the mushroom mountain to hunt for mushrooms. But because she's a Nohara, turns out she is terrible at identifying mushrooms that you are safe to eat.
She's really excited to find some rare delicacy mushrooms, but she just keeps like putting in clearly fucking poison pills.
Yeah.
Very garish, Super Mario Brothers looking things.
Yeah, bright colors are bad in nature with regards to mushrooms. Just fucking avoid if you can, yeah. But, so it becomes a thing of initially them like hiding, pretending to be mushrooms. And obviously, Dekaboo does look like the most poisonous mushroom. It has a big X on it. Mm. Obviously, Shiro has to hide more often because it's like he especially can't get caught. Because not only would humans discover that dogs are intelligent and in a battle for presidency of the world, but that he's a superhero. His family would find out.
That could be any Legato Romagnolo. they're actually reputed rat with that breed of dog in Japan. They're everywhere.
He's a very specific looking dog, though. He's probably easily identifiable by his own masters.
Yeah. It was a bit, again, what, like, you know, the responsible animal mascot character trying to, not in this case, like, mind the baby, but mind the adult. Poisoning herself and her family.
So it changes partway through. It's like, okay, to get this fucking woman off the back, he has to fill her basket with non-poisonous mushrooms. Because obviously he hops in to take out the poisonous mushroom. He's like, she'll be here at it all day. If I fill it up with good mushrooms, then she can fucking leave. And I'll be good to find the bobo one. But wouldn't you know it, she sees this really cool mushroom and takes a picture of it to text it on, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, is this good? Is this a good mushroom? But no, that's like the most deadly looking mushroom you could find.
It's got a gorgeous, elegant, and wild fragrance.
It does.
It still smells good. Yeah.
There is one point where the inner superhero voice tells any adults or children watching that if you pick wild mushrooms, you should get an expert to look at them before eating them.
Yeah.
So an expert beyond your pet dog. Yeah, so then Decker,
I guess she was demonstrating good, like, mushroom things by, like, hey, I got a freaky mushroom. She took a picture and sent it on before she decided to take a bite out of it, so.
Good. Yeah, but Dekafu steals it, so he gets shrunk again, and then he gets carried off by a squirrel.
To be devoured.
That's a tasty looking nut.
And then, Shiro, how does she end? Oh, she throws it away and,
Yeah, he throws it away, and the one on the radio is kind of like, it's like, are you sure this is the blah, 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 one? Because it'll explode if it's not. And he's like, I don't fucking care. I'm sick of looking at mushrooms. I don't want to see another mushroom ever again, which is like the thing at the end of she got too many mushrooms. So it's mushrooms instead of dog food this week, Shiro.
I understand that, man. I'm not really into the mushrooms myself.
Oh man, fucking roasted mushrooms, fried mushrooms. I'm mad about mushrooms.
Yeah, I see. I didn't used to like mushrooms as a kid, entirely down to the thrill suckers from 2000 AD. They scared me off eating mushrooms. And I'm not alone. And one of my friends, also, after I said this once in public, he was like, yeah, that's the same with me. But no, now I love a mushroom. Love a mushroom.
I like this. If I got half a minute, I've got like diced down very finely. It's a this like yeah texture.
Would you do a roast mushroom, like a mushroom filled with delicious cheeses and whatnot? It's so good. Mm. Okay, fair enough. You can put bacon in there. You can put anything in there. It's great.
Spew.
Next week it is a singing contest. By the looks of things, they've got to sing to open a cave or something. I don't quite understand what's going on.
More importantly, we get all the side characters coming in to do their bit.
Everyone gets a go.
So it looks a lot of fun.
So which voice are we going to get for Shiro singing? Like, I think that's an important one.
That is true. That would be interesting. Then we've got Extra Olympia Kyklos, Episode 4. It always starts with Zeus. I know I've been going around saying that Wave Listen to Me is the best thing airing this season, but I think I'm going to have to put this back in front now.
Neck and neck.
See, the thing about it is, right, it's tightly concentrated excellence. Yes. And even if it's like the same excellence per minute that you're getting, it's like, it's such a nice little package of it. It's very satisfying.
But yeah, it's just this thing of like, oh, you'd seen all those guys in the last episode who you thought was just like library footage they'd purchased. And some of it probably was. But yeah. Then they have entirely custom live action stuff showing up in this one.
Oh, I just love the really fucking shitty VHS promo for the Olympics. It's
yes.
All the artifacting and everything, and just the really shitty graphics that they've thrown over it. It's very evocative.
And and the mayor's speech. Because so basically the plot of this episode is the mayor explains how much money the Olympics brings in, and so therefore in their town they're going to have their own Olympics, and it's definitely not for the money. And then like, three sentences later, he admits that it is definitely for the money. This is illustrated by the fact that the gold coins which have replaced his eyes are getting larger and larger as the speech goes on.
And everyone kind of reacting is just like, yeah, this is totally for the money. Do we all know who you are as a character?
Yes. It's the one shot when the dolphins there reacting with him.
Yes. I'm glad the dolphin's are fucking a side character now.
A dolphin, very sinister dolphin. We end up retired to the Vash, the Vaz work up. Here's a grim portent of a future where dolphins rule over humanity. Shooting him a look, it's like, huh?
I mean, like, we've seen that what he does in the past does affect the future, so that dolphin might fucking do very well for itself in the end. Yes. We don't know.
Yeah, so basically he's asked, the head of the village asks Demetrius to come up with 100 games, because the egg and spoon race was great, 100 games which are cheap to play.
That's what he loves about the egg and spoon race. It's just like, oh yeah, fucking everyone's got spoons, everyone's got eggs, we're grand. And we need to, not to compete with the Olympics, but we gotta have our own fucking set of sports. So, I assume it's select from the 100, he's not gonna have 100 different fucking sports in it, although maybe he wants to make money from
there's
each
a lot of events
sports.
In the Olympics, you know, there's different categories, I think, of all the different, distances for track and field.
Oh, but I mean, like, back in, they established in this one, like, there's only like, what, 5 Olympic sports in the old ones or something like that, yeah.
But it works out though, because the Metroid is taught us too. We have like, you know, here is like the core event and then the variations, combinations speaking their own. It's very well thought out, very well thought out.
Yes, those initial ideas are all nose based. So you stuff olives up your nose and blow them out your nose.
See how far you can blow them, that's the...
Drink wine through your nose boxing, then wrestling with vases on your head, and what's in the vase competition, and then...
It's like, I don't think, hold on, that's not a sport though, it's like, who wins that exactly? you just made bobbing for apples or something.
Is it that he was first?
Yes. And then the triathlon where the first part is a marathon and then it's a marathon on horseback and then it's a marathon on horseback but the horse is also on a dolphin's back.
Yeah, so the horse has to ride the dolphin in the water, you see?
And then the thing which breaks the camel's back for the elder is the final throw, the thing which is elder throw. The village elder, whoever can throw the village elder the furthest wins.
Clearly that was the one he was like, I'll throw him some crazy stuff and he'll go for this really fucking normal one and cause it'll really fuck him up. That's the one I want.
Like, what happened is we just like put our tiles at him because there's fairly well off. It's just one of those weird sports they play in villages in rural Germany where you got to like roll a wheel of cheese down a hill or you gotta carry your wife and do hurdles with them, you know?
But it's like you had the base concept of cheese. It's obviously him just sat in the fucking thing with the pots and going like, what the fuck will I come up with? And it's just he's looking around him. It's like, pot based. Nose based.
The first thing coming to his mind because he was worried about it until he saw the dolphin. Thinking freely with his idea of making humans leap through hoops for balls. And then he was like, I shall follow the dolphin's inspiration. I'll just put the first thing which comes to mind. Elder rejects all this, he has another panic attack. And it appears to be the panic attacks which send him into the future. And he's back in Professor Iwatani's house.
And what do you mean? That's Zeus himself.
Explains his predicament, and he's like, oh, well, yes, there's plenty of academic work studying the various strange sports of ancient Greece. And, we see in the book are the urns that he'd written these ideas on, and this is no help.
Like, why did those survive at the time? I think it was the olives coming out the nose one. There was a drawn diagram which looked like they picked it from somewhere or they made it themselves. I don't know. Yes. I kind of want it to be real now.
Yeah, we also see that Iwatani appears to be the academic in question here.
But there's like a really good book about this. Now, this is kid. I have my copy here on the shelf. We'll sort of fall open on this page right here. There we go.
Okay, I'm going to look up Greek olive nose blowing, and let's see if that is a real thing. Nothing immediately comes to up. I'll just get the Wikipedia for blowing your nose.
blow nose. Step one, catch a cold. Step two.
Then we get our song, which always shares the title, doesn't it? So it always starts with Zeus. I do like their picture, the image of Zeus. It's just this guy's beaming bearded face in the sky.
Yeah. They paid that guy to smile once and boy howdy are they going to use it.
The song is about, oh, we do anything for Zeus. I give you all of these tributes. We'll do whatever we can to hold these games in your honor. And I would presume this is like, you know, in a less insane world, we could be running alongside and up to the start of the now postponed Olympic Games in Tokyo. But it does read a good deal like a criticism of the largesse that the Olympics into hosting these games.
It's absolutely commentary on the current Olympic Games and the amount of money and ridiculousness they fucking go to.
Yeah.
And the waste of it, basically, a lot of the time. But by doing it slyly, by like, no, we're talking about ancient Greece. We're talking about Zeus. What are you talking about? We're not mocking the Olympic Games. No way.
Yes. Well, I think given the quantities they say, I think it's specifically the 1964 Olympics is what they're, yeah, probably. So yes, but yes, the
didn't
actual.
Didn't it cause like a America crash or something for them? I think so.
Well, I'm looking at it. It says $10 billion was the overall cost for the 1964.
Gravy.
So 10 billion yen, sorry, not dollars.
Okay, I mean, like, still a lot.
But they mentioned 1 billion yen for building this statue of Zeus with a pool of olive oil at the bottom of it. that was the bit which definitely felt like, oh, this is a specific, obtuse reference. But yeah, we'll see eventually how this all ties in with the 1964 Olympics. But yeah, I had so much fun watching this. One of the best 5 minutes of the week.
Oh, yeah. It's clock's ticking.
That is true. We've only got one more and then it's away. On hiatus.
I will say though, with this being like somewhat of a taking the piss out of the Olympics kind of commentary on it, I don't think it suffers from not being on when there is not an Olympics, you know?
Yeah.
That didn't actually affect it any. It's still funny on its fucking own, basically.
Yeah. I would take 2 and a bit weeks of this any day of the week over the natural Olympics. Which also means I wouldn't have to do it at work. And
yeah. That'd spare you some hassle there.
I was like, oh, sorry, I gotta transmit a live broadcast of the Olympia Kite Class Marathon. Oh, it's a good one.
Then we got Woodpecker Detective's Office, Episode 5, Accursed Beast, in which very little detecting goes on. It's a lot of poets being dopey in love. And
God, a bunch of them around the fucking table in the cafe, I was just like, you fucking dipshits. It was really funny.
It was really funny. Yeah, half the episode is pretty much dedicated to... let me find all these poets though. I can't remember which one.
Yeah,
is.
There's a lot of them, and there was a new one this time, and I was like, yeah, oh, fucking
and,
hell.
Yeah, he's another guy who died early, and... If you watch the cartoon, you can guess what he died of, by the way.
Yeah. By the way, they constantly talk about him being great about drink.
Yes.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, he drank himself to death. One of them admits to the other one that he's in love with the waitress at the cafe they frequent, and he's like, how can you do that? You know I'm in love with her. And
I called dibs, dude. He's like, but yeah, but you're not gonna do anything. But I'm gonna fucking write a poem to her, and then she'll fucking know.
And then Namora comes along, and he's also he denies that he's also in love with her, but he's clearly also in love with her. But he's the one who's like, yeah, shouldn't you consider her feelings? He also seems to be the one who knows that she's already got a man, and really they're on a hiding to nothing. But he can never get a word in edgeways to tell them this.
Yeah, because at one point they start doing like a poetry critique competition. It's like, whose poem is the most lovey?
I hadn't realised Namora is the guy who gave us Heiji Zenigata. So he's the other guy who actually wrote detective fiction in this thing. Which is probably why he set up the detective office in the first place. Then we get Bokusue Wakayama, who is our lush, and he's already written a poem about and then basically they get into a huge debate about whether drinking is an aid or a hindrance to writing poetry.
Because it helps you write from the heart, and be honest, but also it makes you fucking dopey as shit because you're drunk.
Yes.
Yeah, it's a mixed bag.
Meanwhile, we've opened with the episode with Kindiachi having a falling out with Ishikawa, and this entire episode is leading up to that falling out. And we see at the start of the episode Ishikawa's dressed in a Western dress with a bowl hat on, and which seems odd for him. But then he's reading, oh, I forgot the guy's poem. It's the opening to his Heresies collection about the arrival of Christian missionaries, which I'm curious now about that poem, because it was interesting in that it sounded like, it starts off sounding like a criticism of Westerners, but then it reads, at least to how it's read here, like a almost like a commentary on like the instinct, like the pretense of being disgusted with Western things and yet clearly fascinated by all of them.
It's like, ooh, I hate those foreigners. They're so damn sexy. Ooh.
Yeah, it's kind of like with their microscopes kind of thing like that. And eyeglasses and things. Yeah, it's kind of listing off all these terrible things, but in a way that clearly
it's
indicates...
It's like, why are you keeping track of all those things?
The author is actually far more enamored with them than he's pretending to be. Hmm. Which kind
just
of plays
that he's enamored.
Into what Ishikawa was doing here. So he goes to his boss at the newspaper... Asks for an advance. He's like, I just gave you an advance last week. What do you do for your rent? What do you do with that? So, well, I give it to my parents. And then as he's giving him the money, he becomes fascinated with the suit that his boss is wearing and asks him where the suit came from. And you're like, oh, he's just going to go and spend it on that now. But it turns out he ends up in the money by this end of the episode because he takes a job from a rich man to go and speak to a sex worker to make her feel lonely for home so that she'll leave her job and marry this rich man.
And also, basically like finagle her into being in a position where it's like, yes, marrying this dude would be a good fucking option.
Yes. Go and read a poem to her, make her sad, and then she'll marry me. Even though she's in love with you. Or at least that's what Kindaiachi thinks. That's essentially the thing that Kindaiachi's mad at Ishikawa, because when he meets Ishikawa, he's paid his 2 months rent in advance with the money that the rich man gave him. And then, the woman has, Owen, I think her name is, has then given him some money as a good farewell present. To which he's like, oh, maybe I'll go and spend this money on another suit. And Kindaiachi's like, can't you see that she was in love with you and I was in love with you, but you're behaving like this. I can't bear to see you anymore, Ishikawa. I'm cutting you out of my life. And then he ponders that with some more poetry. And in the midst of all this, another crime has taken place entirely off screen. We see it through newspaper headlines. There's been a murder of somebody from a shipping company. And this has uncovered some sort of corruption in the shipping company, and they comment that that's quite like the case in the first episode, which we never...
Because it also involves like a letter found written by the victim and that kind of thing. Yeah,
which we've never actually got around to solving yet.
So it's still up in the air.
Yes. Which I believe this may well be connected next week, or maybe it's not, I don't know. But I believe this story continues next week in some way. But that's pretty much it. It's a light episode, but it does make me go, maybe I do like poetry. Maybe I just taught it badly at school.
Like what I kind of like about the show, I like Leslie's like, hey, remember this guy who died of drink? Here he is drunk. It's like, that's not cool. But I do appreciate them going like, poets are fucking idiots. But like your man kind of having these asides where he like makes up a little poem on the spot related to his situation or. Like, it feels like it's a nice, what poetry kind of should be, like a nice little summation of a thought or a feeling or an idea. And it worked quite well for this because they can basically bookend bits of plot between pre-written poetry.
Yeah, and I like all the characters' enthusiasm for each other's work as well. And which is the real bit they brought into this fictional detective story, because you look at the histories of these guys and... They were fairly intertwined, and so I think like Nomura's like a year was at the same school as Ishikawa, and like a year ahead of him. And he also like had a similar long friendship with Kindaiachi. So it's for a show which is constantly like making little jokes about the nature of these historical figures, it also like treats them with respect and their works with respect. I can't remember which one of the, it's like the grandson of one of the guys is showing up or has shown up as a guest star, I think I saw. So it's quite a clever piece of work. Certainly feels like the cleverest of these let's cast these famous writers in a new setting.
I mean, like, it's basically cast them in their own setting, but like put a bit of frills in it.
Yes.
And with a certain lens over it, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Because the problem is just sometimes now when you look these guys up, you look them up and you get a different anime that they happen to be in.
Yeah, yep.
But yeah, looking forward to next week when it does appear that there is actually a crime. But yeah, it was a nice break to not have any sort of detective work going on.
Yeah, it's weird that, like, a complete lack of detective and crime solving, crime fighting and stuff, and it's just like, let's just stick to the poetry part, and it's like, yeah, it still works pretty good, though.
Yeah, and I think that will have payoffs in the ensuing detective stories, in that we've got a bit more of their characters if we're not familiar with the poetry or their history. Mm.
Yeah, yeah.
Rightio, guys, tell me all about Fruits Basket Season 2, Episode 6. Are you really this stupid?
It seems to have exchanged titles with Wave Listen to Me. we've kind of left that other plot hanging, and the main thing here is they're going to go to a holiday house and spend the time at the beach, which is fairly light and fluff, but still fun and whatnot, yeah. But there is some darker shenanigans happening in the background. No?
Are you there, Niall? We lost Niall.
We lost Niall?
He says he's here. We just can't hear him.
Huh. How queer.
You'll just have to persevere.
He left!
Okay. Oh, now he's left, yes.
Hmm. All right. Bad mouthing.
It's all on you, Dwayne.
Let's see. Where was I? Yeah, so the basic thing is, like, they're heading off to the, I don't know, they're the family holiday home. They've booked it for a weekend or something like that. And, like, a lot of characters are going through some stuff. I think basically everyone's going except for the horse, the guy who's the dog. I wish I could remember anyone's name. I think the monkey was invited, but I don't think she went in the end. Yeah, there was most of them anyway. But, and it's kind of like you get some bits in there, more so the character things of the guy, the little kid who's the sheep is taking the piss out of Toru, saying he's like, oh, you're always going on about your mom. Like, you got a mother complex. Why don't you ever talk about your dad? And she kind of like goes off into a stare and then smiles a bit harder for it. And she's berating herself due to something. But Kyo, the cat guy, he does notice it the next day. It's like she's being extra cheerful. It's like, what the fuck did you say to upset her? Kind of thing, which I thought was a nice kind of character moment that he knows he can read her enough that she's putting on not so much a front, but she's trying to deny her own negative feelings by making herself more outgoing. It's a kind of a good... Again, a lot of the season, it's kind of like retreading old stuff, but it's kind of showing the growth in characters and also in relationships, and it works pretty good for that. I guess B plot is our dog guy is up to some shit because the woman who's the horse shows up at his thing. Our cow guy's gone on holiday with the rest of them as being his usual weird self, but she's like creeping on him, trying to get something out of him, possibly some sex stuff out of him. I mean, like, that's the implication anyway. And then he's also trying to convince the mean old head of the family to go on holiday with him, because she's like, how dare they go on holiday with that ugly girl? I'm going to go get them. But he's trying to convince her. He's like, hey, maybe we should go pay him a visit. You know, that'll be more interesting. It's like, so he's doing dickery in the background. He's always doing dickery in the background, but it's made a bit more clear that he's up to shenanigans again here. I think that's kind of where it's left. Like, there's a lot of fluff stuff, a lot of them going swimming and hanging out at the beach, you know, that kind of stuff. But other than that, it's kind of in the middle of the story, I suppose you'd say. Still good.
Then, something else you can tell me about. It's Tower of God, Episode 7, Lunch and Tag.
Do you want to do Kamen Rider first and see if we get Niall back in the meantime?
There was no Kamen Rider this week, so...
Ah, I'm stuck!
You're stuck. hang on. Do we need to re-invite him, or can he rejoin?
Do re-invite him.
Oh, there he's... Here he is. Here's Niall.
The connection seems to just die completely, and had to reset some things.
I think I covered most of Fruits Basket. Do you want to start with Tower God?
Yeah. Tower Guard. How are we doing? Having lunch and never playing tag.
How has this become such a fucking school manga or anime all of a sudden?
Yeah, it's a bit of that, but it is good. It's getting better to tests, like, eventually. Yeah, but I do like how they are sort of giving us a little more for our kind of ensemble supporting cast too. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Seem to have a backstory and a conclusion to Endorsi and Nanax going off. And again, also some important information about that Princess of Jihad thing and how that whole thing works. So Jihad is the king shit who is rules over
all. First guy who climbed the tower, basically.
Climbed the tower and established all the kingdom and all the thing that goes into it, what you think. The Princes of Jihad, they aren't necessarily related by blood or anything like that, but they are like the sort of,
high achievers, let's say, badasses of their particular rank. Yeah.
And, but they're also part of like, kind of Jihad's like collection. These are his most like, kind of treasured things.
One, because she is like all about her shoes and her fucking high heels. She compares them to shoes. They're shoes in his collection to be displayed on a shelf and never worn. And yeah. I was like, you're not implying anything. Then it explicitly fucking says it. And I was like, ugh.
Yeah. So you're forbidden, if you become President of Jihad, from ever, like, basically having sex or...
I think they just say fornication, yeah.
Or burying children. And wouldn't you know it, that's just what Anak's mother did. Because that's why she's there.
And the part of the reasoning for that is like that you're very powerful, so your offspring would inherit your power. And while a princess of Jalad is like an earned power, an inherited power is something they're trying to avoid. And clearly, like the young Anak, she's fucking tough as nails. So I guess that's true to some extent. But whether it's right to fucking kill someone for having a kid, yeah, probably not.
Yeah, like in Dorsey is like, oh, just like. Watch what your mother did. That's like the highest level of rule breaking, of law breaking. You know, do you think she ever regretted her decision? And then just looking back of all the happy times in her childhood before her house was burned down and her mother was started, just thinking, nope, not a bit. I don't think so at all.
Hmm.
Cut to like the rest of the lads are getting on with their tests. Bam is a bit of a dab hand at the. Using the Shinsu, despite having shown prior to any of this no real ability or sense of it, but we've seen him just freak out with it before, and he's just picking up the skills quite quickly. The other two lads, Shibisu and Hats, are still trying to find people to round out their list of friends they're going to make for the end of the week.
Mm.
So they meet up with Bam and Kun, and... Got a plan. Well, I know two invalids right now who, in Dorsey and Anak, who fell from a great height during their training or examination. And
yeah, they were trying to knock each other off, but they basically pulled each other down. So I guess they both failed that test. But yeah, they injured. They fell from a great height onto a solid fucking ground. So
like Anak seems to just like broken her tail, I suppose. It was all
her tailbone, probably. Yeah.
And we have these two here who, like, you know. In spite of, you know, kind of saying, oh, I don't need your pity, you know, I'm a princess of Jihad, you know, you won't be able to swim so easily. We made your favorite chicken pie. And
they're kind of thinking, because you have to, with the cost of, like, the winning test, it gets you those little credits that you can spend on stuff. And they're like, we've spent all that on medical expenses, and they're willing to buy us lunch. I guess we have to sign the thing, because it's like, we'll only give you lunch if you're our friend. Which is like also, a bit... Yeah.
Also, Kun, right, we're my script you can follow along, like, so that yes, surely a beautiful woman such as yourself, of course she would want to be friends with you.
Yeah, because he's like the stoic swordsman and he's not very good at talking to people and he's scaring most of potential friends away anyway.
Yeah.
So he sticks to the script and it works out. They sign the deed to friendship.
Yeah. And it's like, hey, it's nice. We're making friends. That's really cool. And then Kun is like, one more Bam says, hey Kun, you didn't just like do that for him just so we got people who owe us favors, do you? No, not at all. Happy side effect of anything. Must all this as well, Michelle Light is skulking about, and
eating the discount apples because, she's trying to rack up points for some reason.
Yeah.
Just hang on to her money.
hang on to the money, like, you know, and that also why she stole all those Mars bars when she was in the other day.
Free food! I don't have to pay for this, great.
Yeah. Ro, he's one of the other dudes, he's a fellow with the one red horn and the long hair. He's in the Shinsu training with Bam.
Seems he's having awful trouble, like, holding it together.
So something, like, going on there, and he has a bit of, like, a panic attack with some very disturbing memories of, I presume, his village or people being slaughtered, and I guess their horns are being harvested, which may explain why he probably should have two, why he only has the one.
Yeah.
Something there. And
something going on there as well, yeah.
If it wasn't enough on the edge, it gets a sinister letter, which just said on the envelope, do you want to climb the tower? And then you open the contents and they're absolutely shocking, but he takes it inside, you know, to make sure no one sees. So he's got something in the works there as well.
Mm.
And going to do a prep for the next test as well. And it's going to be like kind of, I didn't really kind of understand what was happening with that because I thought that like the lads, no, we got different like tests and exams. I thought like making 10 friends was their exam, and they got to 10, but they're still in this exam.
Yeah, like I'm not sure if passing exams like gets you the credits that allows you to, you know, keep eating for one, but like do other stuff.
Yeah.
So maybe like you have to accrue credits to actually progress in the tower rather than just do tests. Yeah.
Oh, so well. The only two exempt from this examination are Rack and the other huge dude in the spear throwing class because they met their mark on that one.
Yeah, so I guess they don't have to do this test, so there is a benefit from those earlier tests. It's like everyone just passed like a passing grade rather than an achievement with honors or something like that.
Yeah.
Because Rack's just like laughing at everyone else wearing a big sash. Did he get that sash or did he just start wearing a sash? We don't know.
No, toilet roll, bit of marker. No. This is going to be like a game of tag. It'll be two teams, going on here. But it's like, there are two teams, divided up to two teams, but they are taking the exam separately. So it's sort of, you've got your team and you have one person on there who'll be it. And it's the job of everybody else in the team to fend off and defend their it, because the examiner is also going to throw in their own one. It's going to try and tag the other one.
Yeah, so like you both have like a base and you can keep your it there, but if they can get into your base or tag your it, you win that kind
it's
of way.
More like
yeah.
that. You know, a tag is a bit of a misnomer of anything. Thing is though, rather than have an obvious third party or bringing someone from the other team to be there, they'd be the opposing tagger or capturer. There's one of the examiners, Quant, who was doing the shifty stuff there earlier on, letting through or just pawning off Rachel and Dorsey and that huge dude who massacred everybody in their exam. So he's going to be the one tagging folks in this, and they're kind of shit, fucking throwing an examiner right at us. Like, you know, we got like the numbers, but still, that's a bit unusual, isn't it?
And like the examiners are like, oh, don't worry, he's not very good. He's actually pretty crap at the whole Shinsu thing, so it's reasonably fair. And when he's like going in the field, I was like, I think they were fucking underselling him a little.
Like
he's basically using the water to fling himself whole bodily around. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, he's not just because kind of very very small, very loud man. He's also crazy.
Yeah. He pushes buttons and he goes into berserk mode, I guess.
Yeah. He's put all this stuff with his kind of just like sliding out of shadows with this one big look on his face and saying, your dad never working on me? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're in trouble, essentially.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. And also Bam and his friend have been put on opposite teams. He's like, oh, is that going to be a problem? And his friend, who's like, you know, a sneaky, sneaky man, is like, oh, no, I'll be fine kind of thing.
Mm. We'll see how they get on with that. It'll probably be like, no, here's an overwhelming foe. We had to like come up with a very clever tactic to try and stop it up, because it's Kuhn who's kind of coordinating this and the guy who's like needs to be defended by the rest of the team. So see him under a ruse by him. But it's a good way as well, but kind of mixing up the teams like this and putting them into this sort of environment of again seeing, oh, here's, we haven't seen this character and this character play off of each other, much up to this point, so we get to see.
Or play against each other as it might work. So yeah, they're still changing rules and still changing the format of it, which is still interesting.
Yeah, there's a little bit of an off-road of this kind of serious business, you know, even while getting Anax, sad, tragic backstory there. Having like just a little bit of fun with it as well, because you know, while they're like grappling and trying to push each other off the edge of the cliff, just like become a lot more kind of comic, a lot more looser in the animations as well.
Yeah.
It becomes less, you know, just kind of duel to the depths and more like two fucking schoolgirls just like fun grappling and pulling hair with each other.
Yeah, it's like people with genuine grievances with each other and like very different ideals as people, but they are playing like a game that is a test and they're kind of within the silliness of the rules of it. Yeah.
Yeah. And again, Anna Clinton, the mask drop when it says, well, if it's for a chicken pie, I guess I'll be your friend.
Yeah. You can buy her with chicken pie. Yeah.
I wonder how they knew. It was this happy coincidence that that's the...
I figure someone was listening in. He's buying information, that kind of way. That maybe, seems to be the way with Kuhn. He seems to be like an information gatherer kind of guy.
That could be, yes, yeah. Maybe he just is a bit of it.
Which,
yeah, it's like, I like, you know, it's kind of is changing up the elements of it fairly regularly and in interesting ways episode to episode, and that's really like helping to propel the you forward watching it as well. So yeah, but I want to see what way they'll go about the next test as well, and we've got like a whole other team that will probably interact in a whole and approach in a whole different manner, and it may have a different like examiner trying to tag them as well.
Should be good.
Then we've got Wacky TV, Na Na Na, Episode 5, Defend With Your Lives, The Mini Golden Time Slot, in which our heroes attempt to escape a whale through the blowhole rather than the anus.
Don't want that.
I don't want that. So I guess this is currently being aired in prime time. That is, would appear to be the joke.
They finally made it.
And if they're stuck inside a whale, they'll lose their prime time slot. And I guess the mini prime time, the mini golden time is referring to the fact that this thing's only 5 minutes long.
And also, like, they can't go out the butt, not because it's gross, but because then we'd be poop, and you can't have poop in prime time.
Yes.
So, it's like, that would disqualify us. So we gotta go the only other way you get out of a whale, and that's the blowhole.
And, we'll do this by putting pepper up its nose. Or up the blowhole, so it'll sneeze us out. But all they initially end up doing is making themselves sneeze, so I need to remember these guys' names at some point. Wacky TV, Na Na Na, let's look up their names. Let's get it
Nana
right.
Nanaoka is a mustache, but, and yes. Nanayama is the boom operator.
Yes. So yeah, your fellow with the mustache is the one who's, he takes his skin off and starts doing the sauna technique that they did in the previous episode. But that's
but it's like the Nana version of that. Was it a lolly? And is the Nana lolly?
Yes.
Lolly? I might be saying that wrong.
Loily, I think. I think it was a Loily. Yeah. I think there was two Ys in there, if I remember correctly.
Right.
And that's not enough. So he goes and takes, the green haired fella's skin off as well and uses that. Off screen, the noise is quite horrifying. But
he's just kind of more so like, hey, don't fucking stretch it out, man.
Yes, don't rip it. I need to put that back on. And hey, what do you know? Within the 5 minutes, it's worked. But it's also sneezed out the cast of the hero, the banana version of the hero Yoshiko as well, and the director. So I assume that opens them up for them to show up at some point later on in the series. If required. It was a funny episode. It was getting from A to B. Didn't require me to have to look anything up to get the joke, so a good episode. I don't mind when I have to look things up for the joke either, I will say that, because I feel like I've learned, it's made me have to learn something. Something which may be of no use to me at any point in the future, but I've learned something nonetheless.
Yeah, no, it's just, well, like, them sort of improving, because I can sort of imagine the fella doing that awkward, it's like doing that motion in the booth, you know, just flicking them around and then that's just kind of trying to respond to it. Yeah.
And as far as we know, much like, Woodpecker Detective's Office, this continues.
Defend the slot with your life, lads.
Yes. Then we've got listeners, episode 7, problems. I realise what there's two different names. It's because.
Oh, I was going to say, what's the deal with that?
It's because the song had a different name on the Japanese release. On the Japanese track listing, it's called whatever they call it when they translate the Japanese.
Okay.
So it's a weird situation where, really speaking, the translation on Funimation should really translate it back to what it was originally called. But, yeah, it's a little weird. Cause I look back, what they call it, Day of Rage,
Day of Rage, yeah.
Yeah, but that is a translation of, what's the Latin, Deus Irae's?
Alright. The fucking musical piece from Giant Robo.
Yeah. So, if you run that bit of Japanese through Google Translate, it gives you the Latin rather than the literal translation they've given here. And if you look that phrase up, then it gives you that as well. So I don't know why they called that song, why they called Problems that on the Japanese release of, Nevermind the Bollocks, Here's the Sex Pistols. But they did.
Huh.
Cause that confused me, cause there is like Days of Rage, which is a Tom Robinson song from around this time. Yeah. So I was like, oh, maybe it's going to be broader. No, it's not broader. It's very specific.
Just coincidental in the title there. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's really weird. I wonder why they titled the songs differently. Yeah. Wow.
I don't know in this case, but I've run across this in doing my disco panel. There's a bunch of Alice Cooper fans who are mad at a particular woman, who did a bunch of, translation for Japanese releases, where she would take the English lyrics, translate them into Japanese, and then translate them back into English, and so you'd end up with both her translations, not the original, in the sleeve notes of these Japanese releases. And the reason it came up is because she wrote some disco songs as well. I found an Alice Cooper forum who were furious at her. So I imagine possibly something similar has happened here, where a rogue translator has taken it into their own hands.
Oh, that's like that thing I read recently. Was it Iceland or something? They had a version of Lord of the Rings that was basically Lord of the Rings fan fiction. It was a completely different story for years, and no one knew.
It's like those translations of Harry Potter in China, where there's just bits and sort of. Also, Harry Potter met like the exchange students from China who were super cool wizards and also knew martial arts, and they helped him save the day.
Yeah, I mean,
they're the ones who beat up Voldemort.
There's a long history of this with like the bootleg Sherlock versus Lupin novel and
all sorts
of people who, you know, even like our friend from Woodpecker Detective's office, with him changing his name so it sounded like Edgar Allan Poe. but yeah, what's the guy's name now? I'm trying to remember which one of the pulp historians it is. And I can't remember his name now. But he had like, he used to have a, like, on GeoCities, he used to have like an A to Z of pulp. And lots of the listings would be, this is clearly a knockoff Sherlock Holmes or a knockoff Lupin, from a different country. Because, you know, what they translate the original novels, they sell so well, people want more, so give them more. I mean, obviously we even had that in, the UK with Captain Marvel and Marvel Man ran out of Captain Marvel stories, so they just started writing Marvel Man stories. It was just Captain Marvel under a different name.
Which is a different fucking problem when you come across Marvel Comics, and now that motherfucker's called Shazam, so...
Yeah, and now he's Miracle Man.
What?
Yep.
This is getting confusing. There's like too much overlap. I thought it was going to be a thing like in superheroes where... Like an actor, if someone's already got that name, you gotta change it around.
Anyway, we're not even past the title of this episode yet. Right.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it's a good tangent, so that's
okay. It is a good tangent, and it kind of plays into like how the music's being interpreted in the texture of the story here. In that it's not literal, even though people.
I do like the figurative things of like a thing that would have influenced Nirvana being the thing influenced by Nirvana.
Yes.
Yeah, it's kind of weird thing now.
It's pretty obvious that they're older and keep calling them. It's like, hey, big bro, and it's like no, though, for several reasons.
Yeah, but it's more so that by the end, near Nirvana has been more inspired by the resolve and sort of just a fucking gumption, just to like have get up and go about actually trying to do things.
Hmm. Yeah, I haven't said that. I don't know why it never struck me in Nia's episode that Nia plugs in with a hole in their head.
Right.
Yeah.
I just made him look edgier. I'm jacking him into my brain, dudes.
I think it's a little more on the nose.
Yes, which I love it for. I love it for being on the nose.
I just question every turn of phrase.
Pretty much.
But for most of the episode, you'll be going, where are our heroes? Where are our heroes? Our new heroes are Nia, who is our point of view character for the episode, and we're also introduced to, Lyda and Richie. Which sounds a little too close to Lionel Richie. Particularly when people...
A little too close, yeah. I was like, that's a bit of an odd one, but yeah, no, it's pretty obvious.
But yes, it's Judd Lyda and Sid Vicious are your heroes here. Kids whose parents were killed by the Earless 10 years ago. And now they live in Londinium, where apparently the rulers of the city periodically destroy parts of the city to protect it from the Earless, killing the inhabitants of those sections. And they live in...
I was trying to figure out what that was. Is that talking like about the music industry, like kind of like deciding what fucking gets through or something? I wasn't entirely clear on the metaphor there. I assume it's something specific rather than just in universe as well.
I'm not sure, but, there's an easy, obvious metaphor we get later on of like, yeah, all you need to do to become a player is just want to become a player. Obviously the idea
why they're trying to segment it out and hold it off for people, because if you control the power, great, but if anyone can control the power, that's not good for you.
Yeah, but it's like the DIY ethos of punk is the fact that by the end of the episode, Lyda just wishes so hard to become a player that he's able to plug into the stolen giant robot that he's got.
Yeah. I wonder if it must have been more this sort of baser kind of allusion to when mods getting into fights with rockers and punks.
Yeah.
And...
yeah, sure. I'd say you're not far off there, yeah.
I wonder if it... Probably not, but John Lydon did audition for the lead role in Quadrophenia. And given that our villain of the piece is the lead character of Quadrophenia. I don't know whether that's just coincidence or deliberate. Hard to say, because most things seem deliberate in this thing. So they work in a repair shop run by someone who is clearly Malcolm McLaren. That's probably the most on-the-nose caricature they've done so far. Don't think he gets a name, probably to avoid.
You
know what I mean? He is, sure.
And they live with a old lady called Vivian, who doesn't look anything like Vivian Westwood. And Richie is in love with an unnamed woman. There's a few things, I don't know the reference for the shop she works in or the name of the garage that they work in. I'm sure they must be a reference to something. I wonder if they're like the things which are there now in a particular location from the punk era.
There's a few things that have escaped me here, because I'm fairly certain that in one of the establishing shots at the beginning of the episode, if we've seen all the kind of desolate Londinium streets, there is one that's with like a pram on fire. And I'm
I know what that is, but I can't think of what the fuck it is.
I know I've seen it somewhere before, but it may not be an album cover, but I feel like it's could have been used as an album cover, or if not, then it should have been, because it's quite sticks in the mind like that.
It's imagery that I've definitely come across while flicking through fucking albums, I think.
I wonder feels like that. I wonder if I can fling it with Battleship Potemkin now or something.
There's a straight-up Dinosaur Jr. poster on the wall in Vivian's flat, along with a therapy poster as well.
She's a pretty cool old lady.
Yeah, but so they're mad at the ruling classes of Londinium who live in a multi-sided Big Ben and have walled off sections of the town. And so it seems to be the Phil Daniels character, who we know from the website is called Tommy. just in case you don't get the Who reference. To be fair, they mixed up their Who references. It's clearly Quadrophenia because the other two characters are Leslie Ash and Sting. I couldn't believe it taking me that long to recognize that Marshall Ace is an elderly Sting. It was only when I was like, okay, so those two are definitely out of Quadrophenia. Who's the other guy then? And I remember, Ace Face is the name of the Sting's character in Quadrophenia. Oh, and hang on a second. He looks exactly like Sting.
It's a big scootery looking wheelchair as well.
It is. He's wearing the same leather jacket that Ace Face wears in Quadrophenia. But we see like their child army, who seem like really young, but so it's bleak and yet also funny that there's these tiny little kid mods.
Tiny little kids in the big puff jacket fucking telling people what to do and shit.
Well, I was reading up on a bit of this because it was like, it's all like a term and a culture, and it's more of a cultural osmosis, but never really like delved into too deeply.
Sure.
And they grew up in like a fairly young, because it was a fairly like maybe just about to leave school kind of age. You could be like as young as 17. How to do it? But as well, there was lots of stories when they kind of caught on. The Cartesian of newspapers at the same city runs a kind of profile. It's like, you know, here's like our typical young mod who's 17 years old and he goes out clubbing every night of the week and spends his money, on records and clothes. And that was kind of a bit of a fucking, probably a load of bullshit and a kind of typical results, because not many teenagers, at that point in history would have had a lot of spare time or extra money to be spending on that kind of shit.
I thought it could be like referencing like, you know, like fucking teenage fans and stuff. So not so much the followers, but if the fans like enforce the ruling of the fandom, that kind of way, which would be the younger crowd.
We'll no doubt see more of that next week, because it is the Who episode next week. They want to repair this broken mech, which they stole, and they want Nier to pilot it.
They found it.
Yes.
At the side of a road.
Sure, sure. That's why they hide it.
No one else in the fucking estate looks at it sideways, even though it's just like covered in a huge tarp sometimes. Yes.
And there's not too much like direct quoting of lyrics, though. I think the cringiest one is,
I am an antichrist.
That's the one. Yeah. Yes.
Hey, come on, let's celebrate Christmas. I will not celebrate Christmas, for I am the Antichrist. It's like, oh, fucking hell, that's awful.
It's great. Yeah, it's fantastic.
Please, Jonathan, you do this every year. You
just get the fucking Christmas together as a family.
But then this giant earless queen shows up, and they... Operation Godfather, I think is what they call this technique.
Send out the cops, the bobbies, the oi fucking lads, to fight it, and it's like not working. It's like carve up the city instead. Plan B, I guess.
Yeah.
they do warn people they're going to do it beforehand, but it's not really making much difference when you're shooting lasers into, like, populated areas.
Yeah. I love the real stock music sound effect to have with her lasers. Just the
oh, it's that classic, like, it's like, I think that's like a Hanna-Barbera one.
It does. Sounds I was like, just like, yeah. Is this fucking Space Ghost I'm watching here?
Yeah. And this is while Nia's out getting Christmas presents for the boys and Vivian. And so Nia is away when Lyda just gets so fed up that the ruling classes aren't recognizing them, and he gets so passionate he just spawns a ear socket in the back of his
ear jack
in the plug. I should know. I've got a whole bunch of them in front of me. on his back and plugs in and plows straight through the queen. He thinks that he's the one who's defeated it, but then sees through the hole. It's the mech that he saw 10 years ago when he was a kid who saved them from the earless. Jimmy Stonefree's mech.
But that's not Jimmy Stonefree.
It's not. It's Mew. And then Mew blasts the earless queen and them at the same time. And
I wasn't sure. I thought it was trying to show that evil Mew was like was holding the whole queen or something like that. Yeah.
It seemed to be coalescing around.
I wasn't sure if it was trying to suggest that it was caused by this evil Mew or related to, at least.
See, I thought I took it was that was there. I felt like it was the Londinium Mod Army were responsible because the same light glowing from
right.
the weapon that she uses is the light we saw from the top of Big Ben.
Mm-hmm.
While they were like, what are they up to in there?
Yeah. Well, that would make sense too, but like you said, we're probably going to find out more next week anyway.
Yes, because we're going to rewind next week and find out how she ended up in that situation. And now Nia's like, I will never forgive you, Mew. And also, where is Echo?
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah, also that the Mew that we see here is wearing not her usual costume. It's wearing a different costume. It's a lot like Jimmy Stonefree's jacket and trousers. Mm,
yes.
Basically, as I think, Mew is Jimmy Stonefree. I was thinking about ages ago when he said something there when they got that picture of Jimmy with Prince, whatever his name was in that episode. You kind of remarking how kind of androgynous you kind of looked. I'm thinking, if they're one and the same person, then that's why you can't find them.
So you're kind of looking, because you're trying to find out your past and find this guy who's connected to your past. It's like, yeah, because that's you. And, to make the character androgynous would make sense that now he's a teenage girl or something.
We shall see. I like this episode because it was a change of pace by taking our two leads out of it. And,
I think it really benefited from taking them out of it because it kind of let us focus more on characters we've not seen in the world. And I mean, like, it's not like he gets to focus on them long because they don't make it past this episode.
Yeah.
But
it could be good as well for this non-nerd iteration of Echo and Mew got to learn to work together and build up their teamwork, which is, I guess that's just like a theme we're going to keep touching upon, but it feels like it's kind of, yes, we get it, but you know, can you expand on that maybe a tiny bit more? So maybe like a little respite from that is welcome.
So the next episode is the real me. Now, the fascinating thing I've just discovered is that, in a week's time, as we're recording, the first of the ending theme albums comes out. Song of Listeners Side Goodbye. And if you buy these from certain locations, you'll get a sticker. And these stickers reveal what the other remaining episodes are called. I don't know which order they are, but these are the other remaining episodes. And some of them allude to bands who do not have characters on the website to be their equivalents.
Are they fucking like putting some secret shit, like stuff they haven't even advertised, obviously?
Yeah, I believe so. So we've, the ones which relate to people who we know. We've got this episode called Freedom coming up. So that's obviously Jimmy Stonefree, Jimi Hendrix. There is, and the other one is Crossroad Blues. Which is interesting because there's two characters who are in the opening credits who appear to be in like a white void, which is, is Janis and Robert. So I was expecting a Janis Joplin one, not actually a Robert Johnson episode, but it appears to be Robert Johnson rather than, and of course both of them are the members of the 27 Club, as was Jimi Hendrix, as was Kurt Cobain.
As was Sid Vicious.
As, I don't know. I think it might be. I can't remember if he was or not.
Maybe not. I think he was.
Sid Vicious. Yeah, he might. So 21. No, he didn't.
21 even. Yes. Yeah, that's much worse.
So they're going to make like a super team out of people who died young? Jesus.
Possibly, yes. and then there's two more which don't have characters on the website relating to them. There is Hello Goodbye. So that will be the Beatles episode.
Mm.
And then there's I Am the Resurrection, which will be the Stone Roses episode.
Alright. Yeah. I kinda like that sort of thing. Here's a hidden thing on the album. If you're a real fan, you'll go to your
album,
get it together. Yeah.
And if you watch the show backwards, it plays a different message.
No, last episode, it'll be 40 minutes long. It'll be like a regular 23 minutes, and then you gotta have like 8 minutes or so of this like black screen silence, and then the rest of the episode got a bonus track on the end. Bonus content where they go to the beach or some shit.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, the second album will be out June the 24th. So this first one gives you the ending themes. They're more EPs than albums, really. Because the first one only gives you 5 tracks, the ending themes from 2 to 6, and then the next one will give you the ending themes from 7 to 12. I'll have to see whether they show up on, UK streaming sites. They may well do. I noticed some of the sponsors as well. There's like, for the first time this episode of like Marshall are one of the sponsors of the show.
I didn't notice that.
No, I hadn't noticed that before. Maybe I wasn't paying attention to the credits.
I know. I was getting, like, you know, I got to pick them up from, again, watching this alongside Carol on Tuesday, which I probably shouldn't have been doing alongside this and getting mixed up as to which reference is being dropped in which program.
Then we've got Wave Listen to Me, Episode 7, I Want to Cry, in which I think all weird things from earlier episodes are now all fully tied together, because this was the guy who was looking at a photo and blood dripped on the photo from a much earlier episode and was thinking back to seeing a woman naked, and we now get the context for that scene. As we learn who the woman is who's haunting her old neighbour, it was this third-generation Slavic woman he ran into on a holiday, and
they were the only young people there, so they kind of hit it off, and like they were like, we're going to do it, but we're going to do it in a magical special way.
Yes.
Yeah. I want to see her naked body, and she would want to see mine when we're somewhere like, together. It'd be like a lovely hot spring. So we're going to hike up into the mountains and go up in this like naturally occurring hot spring. Well, there's this rope right there, and in the mist, we should finally embrace. But then we fell unconscious because of the gases in the atmosphere around.
So yeah, because they went at winter to avoid crowds.
Yeah, first of all, they picked one entirely at random by throwing a dart at the map.
Yeah. they went in winter to avoid crowds so they could, you know, do it without people being around. They went like when there was like low wind because then the gas would be about. And you were kind of like, so you were asking to fucking die, basically. Avalanche area, all this kind of fucking thing. It was just like, yeah, this was just a disaster from the get-go. But he doesn't remember what happened after that, because he woke up with some what was that, like a rescue kind of team going like, yeah, we found you buck naked in the middle of nowhere, what the fuck? And he's like, did you see a woman? And they're like, nope, didn't see her. So he assumes she didn't find the body when the snow melted in the spring and everything, so he's still looking for her to this day.
Yes. We should also mention that when he first meets her, she's dressed like Mytel from Galaxy Express.
Yes.
3-9.
The hat, yeah.
She's not, she's of European descent, get it? No.
So yeah, Minari is very suspicious, so she goes to investigate.
I mean, she's even questioning his story. He's like, yes. Hey, you send the letter, here, I have a copy of it, that she died, and he's like, I was really distraught, I guess. So his story doesn't line up, he's up to something.
And she texts Nakahara to come to the apartment and wait outside and wait for her to text him to come in and do whatever.
If you have a stun gun,
yes.
Bring it.
Yes.
Later on, she's texting him, is like, okay, if he says this and he takes her hostage, she's like, how dare you, you coward? And that's my fucking cue to burst through the fucking ceiling. And just like, all these plans, it's great. Oh, good stuff.
Yeah, so she goes into the crawl space and, realizes that, the reason this damp liquid is coming is because apparently whenever the neighbor runs a bath or the shower, there's a leak. And that water is dripping, but then she notices.
And obviously they're coming in and having a shower every 7 o'clock, so it happens at the same time every night.
Yeah.
But the water's clear.
That's what was throwing, that's what was throwing me off with the, because I thought it was something to do with the septic tank, but it didn't happen always when a toilet was flushed. I thought, well, it smells like rotting meat, so I thought, what's happening there?
But that's the thing here, like obviously the water is clean, it's just coming out of a shower. It is leaking into something else.
Yeah, so she follows the flies that have been swarming her and finds 6 plastic bags about the right size of a chopped-up petite woman's body.
Just instantly calls the police. Yeah. Hello, police, I found a chopped-up body.
Really glad we can't spell this TV program.
It looks so fucking gross.
It just looks so foul up in there. And then it's like it's dripping onto them. And then the guest is like
when
right
face
on her nose
into
well.
It, I was just, that's so gross. Yeah.
It was really grossing me out. She's like wearing like the scarf around her mouth and it's the soaking and stuff. She's just inhaling it with every breath. It's really...
I did like the way it's like, oh no, my fucking very expensive costume. And the subtitle kind of is like, that's not a fucking thing.
I was getting awful flashbacks to my former career as a house cleaner.
I imagine you have all the horror stories, yeah.
There's been at least one cleaning up after a dead body. Well, the body wasn't there, but the belongings and such was kind of in there.
Yeah.
And the place smelled awful because he was a fella who had no, like, kind of everything. I think he was like, he'd immigrated there from Germany or something like that.
Oh, so
but, he had a heart attack. It wasn't only like his mid-30s or something. He had a heart attack and his car was laid dead in his apartment for like 2 weeks and doing two hot summer weeks. And we went into the place to clean it out like the day after they removed him. It was troubling.
I imagine so. Jesus.
She calls the police and Nakahara, and then immediately cut to Oki, the man being led away by the police. And then she's full of herself the next day when after we see them showering her and
they keep re-sniffing their hands and stuff.
Can't quite get it out.
Is the smell gone?
Yeah. Three showers according to Mizuho to get it most of the way out, and it's still kind of there.
But then Minari shows up at the restaurant the next day and she is full of herself. She thinks she's done this wonderful job bringing this man to justice.
Yeah, he's kind of off by the police and he's like, I didn't do it. And he's like, that justice has been served.
Send her to the judge.
And then the police get in contact with her and ask her to come along. And then we see her show up at the radio station, her face completely ashen.
Yeah, your man assumes she was taking part in the zombie walk because she looks so bad.
2 weeks yet.
I did like the way they were talking about it. I was like, wow, this is really fucking good because, I mean, like, this will be all over the fucking news. And I'm not sure if we can – the audio is shite because she kept the recorder in her pocket rather than taking it out. But it's like, we can probably clean it up. And, I mean, like, based on the free news coverage we're going to get for this, this is going to be really good advertising for the show. But not so much. Episode 2 is going to be a bit of a...
I have something to tell you.
Yes. Turns out, then we see the interview and it turns out it was not a dead body. It turned out to be mutton. And then we got the landlord to explain the layout of the apartments, and your flat was immediately above it.
I like the way the police are explaining this to her, and they're not mad, they're just like, we're in a lot of trouble.
It's the second
now.
Time she's called the police. This guy.
And now they're like, now this guy could really fuck us up because of you specifically. Yeah. And we're mad at you, but we're more so worried about our fucking careers.
I won't let this guy go absolutely apeshit on you if it gets any heat off of us.
Yeah, pretty much.
So what she'd done, when she first moved down there, her parents had given her a load of mutton.
Like,
and
40 pounds of mutton on the bone or something.
But it was also like some juices as well, fruit wine.
Like apple cider or something, yeah.
And there wasn't enough room in the fridge, so she stored it in the floor compartment and then forgot there was a floor compartment.
And obviously the person who moved in next wasn't told there was a floor compartment. Also, it broke in the meantime. So, I mean, like, that's more so the landlord's fault if you think about it. I'm the innocent party here.
Well, how did that smell not drive her out of her own flat? Like, it must have been a very tight seal around the floor on a trap door to keep that in.
The way it looks like it's a little plastic bin. And the bottom of the bin broke with the sheer weight of mutton in it. But from the woman whose apartment is above, obviously the plastic seal is still intact on her apartment. So the smell only goes down from the leaky pipes. Also the landlord's fault.
Yes.
She's absolutely innocent. She's the injured party here.
At most, she's 50%
cowboys
guilty.
Should be up in there.
Most 50%, yeah. And the guy's going like, you're the most guilty in this. They're just disgusted with her.
But yes, but she puts out, she starts a regular feature of missing persons and then describes, the love of his life. And
your man's sitting there the whole time just staring daggers at her. He's not so much interviewing as opposed to fucking do it.
Yes. Agrees to drop charges.
And notes to each other as well. It's just like, you know, she's just going, it's just a... written on a note, it's like, fine, I'll drop charges. You've admitted it yourself on national radio enough to satisfy me.
And, yeah, they're discussing a show about her wanting to make it as fluffy as a towel, but it feels like she's being strangled by a silk thread that she's pulling the end of.
Yeah, she's kind of like her own fucking worst enemy. Her, and to be fair, also her parents in this regard. Her parents also seem to be considerably at fault for her life, but mostly her.
Yeah, but she pulls out this bit of inspiration about what direction her program should go in, and it's just like, it's just, I want to be this place, this chance at redemption for fuck-ups like me, so send in your questions, and we'll try and get through this together.
And that brings us back to, like, the first episode, where it's a agony aunt type thing, and she is still a clusterfuck. Mm.
Yeah, because I've put up a lot, and I know a lot of these same things, you know, and just, you can't quite put it into a tidy phrase, but I get it, man, so I'm all here. If I knew anything to have people not feel that, not be constricted and feeling again strangled by that sensation, so, I'll do what I can.
Since the start of her radio show, I think we've only seen her do two good things, and one is put on an entertaining radio show, and two is accidentally stop a murder.
Yes.
That's about it.
Yeah, it looks like next week we're back with the manager out of hospital and stuff with the
parents.
It looks like with the guy who ran him down and the sister who works at the
She'll get some more stuff to do. And what's the manager going to be like now that two women are working at his restaurant? Yes.
Oh, yeah. And the guy who's supposed to replace Minari, I assume he will also be out of hospital.
Wait, was that guy in hospital? I thought he found Jesus and went to Tibet or something.
No, that was
the grandson.
That was the tenth guy.
The,
Yeah, sorry. There's a lot of fucking guys to keep track of. Surprisingly.
It also looks like Nakahara's sister's back as well. Yeah, good stuff. And then Gallen Dino, episode 7, the last for the time being. I'm worried about you and Guy talk.
Oh, Kaede's got the Rona. Dino's getting his ass out of there.
Yes, Kaede has a cold. And so she can't play with Dino. He's going to have to go and play by himself today.
He's going to have to sit and play in the playground while it starts to rain with a sad musical number. Oh, wait, that's live. Oh.
Yes, that's actually happening in the park. And, yes, this musician explains his philosophy of life. And this strikes a chord with Dino, because he's saying, if I just make one person feel better today, then my music's worth it. And so then Dino goes, I know a person who needs to feel better. I'll bring this complete stranger back home with me. And I do like how we avoid, like, the scene which gets him home. He just explains, well, your Dino explained to me. Well, I think he explained to me what the situation was.
Like, how did he explain through mime? He's very good.
And then you think he's going to sing, like, the same sweet twee indie song that he was playing in the park. But then he just starts rocking out with basically acoustic thrash metal.
And Kate is so surprised and amused and touched and confused that it's just like, can't help but smile.
Yes.
I guess it worked.
But you know, you've got to let Dino off. You know, if you were to put him up with it now, he'd be so sad. And, you know, he means.
And a month later, this fella's famous.
He's got the same spiel on TV, which I was really amused by. I assume this is an actual guy, right?
Now Taro Moriyama, I think it is. He's a kind of acoustic guitar indie sound and blah.
And then Dino turns to us, the viewer, and puts his thumbs up as if to say, "Was right all along."
Now I did this.
The stare he gives to the viewer in the second part is slightly more ambiguous, but.
Slightly more, I can see you kind of stared, but like.
It was like, I've achieved what I was planning, but, for what reason? But yeah, the first short is now, Dino's got a cold. And, he's trying to throw a snotty tissue in a bin. But it doesn't reach. He gets out, he gets the shivers, and then sneezes all over the bed clothes.
Mm-hmm.
With the exception of hiding the HD fucking snot that comes out of his nose under the blanket, I know those feels. That was like, oh, this feels really real, until he was just like, oh, that's just gross as heck, dude.
It did feel like some kind of government warning in the morning. Here's what happens when you don't cover your mouth when you sneeze. Germs fly through the air, and there are enormous bubbles of one's spit and snot and mucus. They're going to affect everybody in the world around, and Sisko also completely soaked his blanket, which is going to stash under the rug so no one sees.
Then it was Spot's Dino. This time
that was quite clever. Yeah,
he was hidden amongst a bunch of live action dinos.
Because you're looking at it, you're looking like, oh, this one's a joke, because obviously they're all dinos. It's like, well, no, wait, there he is.
It can't be that simple, right? Yeah,
they're trying to trick you into stop looking, because it's like, I've already found the dino. It's all of them.
See, by level 7, you've gotten used to that kind of speedy, frantic one, so you have your, can catch it out now. So you got to, like, use a more, cunning tactic to try and throw you off this time.
Then the next part, Dido's going out and Yamada's coming over to have hot pot. Dino ends up meeting,
Well, it's like she invites the dinosaur to the hot pot. It's like, come on, we're having hot pot. And he's like, no, I got to go out. But he's set up a meeting with his friend, I guess.
Yes.
Because he's like, I got to know, man. Has she been seeing any guys?
Oh, tons of them. Guy brought a pizza. Another guy got it at the post. Another guy came by and gave us a mother food.
I brought that singer home.
Yeah.
like so Wrong many.
Door open that piece.
And he's distraught at this.
And he's going to head right over and tell her how he feels. To which Dino then has a flashback to...
to the extinction of the dinosaurs.
Yeah.
This is a disaster!
I've got a bad feeling about this.
Yeah, so is my interpretation of it is he doesn't want them to get properly back together again, because then he'll have to move out of Kaito's apartment.
Yeah, and it's so, a disaster for him. It's extinction level event for him in that apartment.
Yes. Yeah. And so therefore the resolution of her just putting another photo back on the board of the photo
she's not throwing out
is enough for Dino to remain happy and to avert his extinction once more. Which is why he then turns to the camera and looks happy and stares right into your soul.
I'm safe for now.
But the middle part is the fact that Kaede and her friend are discussing the fact that you haven't seen anybody else since Shota. We should call up Shota. And they're like, ah, I bet that's Shota coming running now. But it turns out it's Dino, but then Shota was right behind.
He managed to outpace him getting back to the apartment as well.
Yes.
And they're all they're both delighted. It's just like, oh my God, we were just talking about you.
Yeah.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, it's kind of like the couple who haven't split up properly. Is essentially.
It's like they've split, but they're like still cool with each other and they still hang out like fucking constantly and they're not seeing other people and it's like, just, why not just go out some more?
And,
maybe just need to accept or understand that. But well, it's not maybe nothing more for us here romantically, but if we still enjoy each other's company, so we need to like maybe
they're in an awkward place,
sort of relationship instead.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next shot is Dino rocking backwards and forwards.
That was good in that it hit me at the right time of I'm lacking sleep lately, and that thing was like, is this trying to fucking hypnotize me now? Because that's what it feels like.
I had to kind of just turn it down a bit because if anything, repetitive beats have been keeping me awake lately, and I am trying most to avoid them.
I had to turn it down for the next fucking live action bit, but I think you know which part.
So the next part, Kaede has pulled her back. I know the feeling. And
I thought you might.
Fortunately or unfortunately, I did not have a dinosaur to go and run out and find four comedians to come and cheer me up.
I think fortunately.
So this is like another version of the first part of the animated story. But then we get a short within a short where Dino is doing his laundry and two women observe him and take the mickey out of him because why is he here? He hasn't got any clothes. It's ridiculous.
What the fuck is he drying? He's naked.
Whose clothes are they?
And it turns out he's drying a soft toy rabbit. I thought he was going to be drying the small dino from the previous
episode. That would be great, yeah.
Well, that's you, man. You can't do that to yourself.
But it appears the shorts within the live-action ones are being made by a specific person, separate to the rest of the live-action story.
Just posted out the suit to him, saying, okay, here, buddy, here's the camera. You go.
Then Kaede wakes up and is like, oh, Dino, you're here. And then turns around and sees, yes, Dino is here, but he is also with four strange men. Who are here to cheer her up and make her feel better.
What was the first guy's fucking catchphrase that he used at the end of every joke?
Oh, I'll get to it in a second. He was the best one of the four.
Like, initially I was like, oh, I can't wait to see the next guy, but I was like, these guys suck. The first guy looks amazing in comparison.
He had
jokes.
Choco Choco P was his catchphrase.
Thank you.
He is Go Minagawa. He is a man dressed like a children's television presenter.
I was going to say dressed like a child at the beach.
Big toddler.
He's wearing like a Minions hat for fuck's sake.
It's not a Minion's hat. It's got three eyes. And
I thought it was a Minion with a bunch of eyes. Nah, it doesn't matter.
Now he's a guy in a pink polo shirt and dungarees and socks and no shoes. But I guess it's because he's coming to somebody's house. And he's wearing a bobble hat with three cartoon eyes and a cartoon mouth with fangs on it. And he basically does a year of Choco Choco Pee, his catchphrase. So basically doing his catchphrase in different styles. And miming out various situations.
It was either the one playing Kaede or like the director or whatever, but someone was really fucking enjoying that.
Yeah, the woman playing Kaede. That
I figured it must be.
It's clearly she had no idea what these people were going to be doing, and so you get a literal general, a genuine reaction from the other side of the screen.
Yeah.
I also noticed you might have my TV. No, it's not quite, but quite similar.
So that's where it's been all this time.
Yeah, exactly. And then the next guy is, let's find out what his name is. Well, Dino joins in with the Choco Choco Pea, and then the guy's hat flies off. The second guy is a half-naked man wearing a loincloth and a cardboard lion's head on top of his head.
That's the motherfucker I had to turn it down for, because he was too fucking loud.
This man is called Onishi Lion. And basically, his act appears to be acting out scenes from The Lion King.
Fucking terrible.
While half-naked.
Yeah.
That appears to be his entire act.
Hey, remember The Lion King? That's my joke!
It got him on telly, didn't it? It got him on telly. You can't say it didn't work.
I can't say it didn't fucking work for him. Yeah, sure.
And let's have a look. How long this man's career?
How long has he been doing this one joke?
The Lion King is perennial favorite. People keep picking it up like year after year.
Everyone gets the reference. Yeah.
He is.
That's
what
I imagine for being bounced off of too.
He's on the Ninja Warrior wiki. That's where he's on. He took part in the 2009 Sasuke. So he's been doing this for a long time. He's a 40-year-old man. And judging from this photo, this has been his act for a while.
Oh, God, he's still wearing the fucking same paper mache lion, is it?
Possibly, or he may make his own, or...
Oh, dear.
Yeah, I guess this is a guy who, yeah, it looks like maybe he's had different ones over time.
Mm. He found his niche. It's filled. Whoever wanted it filled, but it's filled nonetheless.
Yes. And essentially, well, I'm now seeing, yeah, now basically what it appears to be is like a homemade version of what the Lion King musical costume is.
Okay, right. So maybe he's doing like the musical songs or something.
Yeah.
But they're the same basic songs, though.
Yeah, but if you sing them very, very loudly, I have to turn the volume down.
It's more screeching than singing.
Yeah, pretty much.
And then the next act is Joy Man.
Who's a man in two tight trousers and a guy who's incredulous about this man with two tight trousers.
Well, it's your classic man's idea.
I did like the way initially, like, the straight man comes up and is like, wait, what the fuck am I supposed to do on my own? And then Weirdo fucking comes along and is like, oh, thank goodness. Something to react to.
So, yeah, apparently the duo is... hang on a second. Am I getting on the right page here? Oh, maybe not. Right, Joy Man. Yes, I can't find the name of the other fella. But yeah, he just speaks absolute nonsense. There really is no form to what he's doing.
I remember Smoked Meats and Meryl Streep. I thought, yeah, that's a good weekend right there.
Yeah, I feel like they're puns which have been translated into other puns. So yeah. it's just wordplay by the sounds of things.
He's just saying weird things, like whatever relates to what sounds like another thing. Yeah, and the other guy's like, whoa, you can't say that. Yes,
this is the prime time golden mini slash.
And this page I found appears to have his description attached to something completely unrelated. Yeah, I'm trying to figure out exactly who these people are as a total group. Does this have Joy Man written on it? One of one. Okay, tell me all about Joy Man.
I know Joy Boy, but Joy Man, I'm a little fuzzy on.
Yeah, I can't find anything else about your other fella.
He's a mystery.
He is a mystery, yes. There, I would say they may be the weakest of the group, but maybe something's lost in translation.
Because
the other guys, one was doing like the absurdism of a man in his 40s doing Lion King songs dressed in a homemade Lion King costume, and the other is at least had mime on his side.
Mm. I think people came forward with someone their age doing Lion King songs probably going to feel very seen by that sketch.
been called
out. I'm not talking about me, but, you know, I don't know people that I know.
I guess, see what this says. Maybe the group's called Joy. Oh, I've got some extraneous noise. I thought that site was muted. It says Eon and Yoshimoto 555 Live, open brackets, Joy Man. I don't know though. That might just be the show and Joy Man's appearing here. I'm going to investigate further. I shall try and have more information on Joy Man for next week, because this is information I need to know now. Even though he's my least favourite person on this episode.
Yeah, but we'll need to know this so we can have some more to come of Gallon Dino content.
That's true, yes.
Packed up.
Kaede starts to get all slightly teary-eyed about how the effort that Dino has made to make her feel better. He makes her want to laugh and cry about how nice he is as he parties around with these four strange men in her room.
Was this a different apartment than the last one? It's got the same trappings, but I feel like they needed to go to like a bigger studio to fit this many guys in.
I think it looks like the same space when they had man with the cowboy hat and not much else on.
Yeah,
and they had a studio space like that. I think they've rigged this out to be look like a day apartment, but
to be the Dino has brought home a comedian apartment. Yeah.
We've all been to our special guests, Gal and Dino meet Laverne and Shirley.
That is it. That is all we watched this week. There is no more. And there'll be even less next week as we say goodbye to Gal and Dino. I think there's an Olympia Kai class. Well, we should already be up. It was a weird thing where it said stopped with five, and sometimes people have said that meaning that it has stopped.
Check what the ongoing tally of these things on ANN says.
It may have already stopped then, because it says there's no episode five yet on the website. So I think there would have been one normally.
It does seem to be earlier, yeah.
So we may have said goodbye to that as well. Broadcasts of episode 5 plus have been postponed. Okay.
Okay.
Resumes on June 22nd.
Yep. So, yeah. I believe that's coming back as far as we know. So no more extra Olympia Kyklos, no more Gal and Dino. So is it time to fit something else in? Or do I just start watching Tower of God next week? That might be why.
I think it might interest you. You know, this again, it changes up the elements often enough that you can probably keep interest in it. If one episode didn't do it for you, you probably would have something maybe more your speed in the following one.
Like, I'd love to slot in something else that's weird, fun, like Kyklos or Galandino, but like, what the fuck else could you possibly fill with those? Fulfill those roles. It's like, there's nothing else, man.
Yeah. I was going to look and maybe getting up on art, because I see on the opposite list that it's one of the few things that actually has been completed, or was pretty much close to completion anyway. So, that sounds good. I was amused at what I saw there, and I would say that if I had the time, I would try and give a look again, because I like art, like art history. Or, as you've said before, Brian, if it comes to it and when it's eventually released, you can just tear into a brand new animal and watch that week to week.
Yeah, well, that's going to drop just before July, so that definitely gives us one thing relatively modern to talk about if there's nothing else in July. But in theory, Millionaire Detective's planning on coming back in July, just starting as if it never happened in April. But we'll see how feasible that is in reality. But hey, I'm looking at my Crunchyroll queue, and there's an awful lot of things I've only got part of the way through the journey on. some actually probably shouldn't be here anymore. I'm pretty sure I'm not going to get back to Flip Flappers. but yeah, there's an awful lot of things there that and some of these are quite wacky. Such as Tanari no Seki-kun, the Master of Killing Time, or World Full News.
There's so many stuff we could go back on if we get completely stuck, yeah.
Or a 100% teacher Pascal.
Instead of Asobi Asobase on here, which I was sort of, this is really good, so I don't want to watch it all at once because it's very, very unique and there's not much like it. But now it's taunting me. I think, I could go for a comedy like that again. It's also that, what's that? Kaguya-sama Love is War, which is, they've had a few out of the second series of that. This one, I don't know if that's definitely comes up as well. But that's, I've heard up and down, that's, some good stuff. And does that have Battle of Wits and Turnabout and so forth sounds right up my alley. So maybe I should, get on that train as well if I can.
Oh, we shall see. I've got, what have I got? I've got 5 episodes of Haikyuu to watch though for the next episode of Dynamite in the Brain. But what's coming up on Secret Sailor Madness, guys?
Well, we were looking at, again, Clerks the Animated Series. We've also maybe looking ahead at more long form because, like, I've started at least. This took a bit because following on from that, it'll be a bit of a larger endeavor. Will be The Critic, which had a lot of Simpsons alumni, editor, and Jensen Books as producer of it, trying to emulate that same sort of TV animated sitcom magic that Simpsons did. Well, it's, I don't know, it's something I revisited again in recent years, like, you know, from when I first saw it, and it has been maybe kind of a bit hit or miss. Like, some bits, no, this is really hoary and hackneyed, but then some of those lines are real fucking good. So it'll be a little bit of exercise in trying to... It does seem to be, like, the kind of to have been broken that people are fairly divided on, Dave, or have run up completely, or they are really into it.
It's definitely a lot of, like you said, a lot of the Simpsons creators, like, kind of closer to the top of the game kind of thing, whereas now Simpsons is, what, fucking... Is it 31 seasons or something?
Yeah.
It's a farcical number, whatever it is, yeah.
I was seeing on the credits for the pilot that I watched there the other morning, that it had Judd Apatow, later on, like, comedy film director, on writing on that. So I'd say there's quite more than a couple of names on there as well that may have flapped their start or a bit of a break on this anyway.
Yeah.
Look at those couple of things, but you're going to have hearing about Clerks the Animated Series, which actually must get reminding our friends in the States if we're still in a position to be able to record that one.
They might have free time like the rest of us, though.
Right, otherwise we'll be back here next week with more Let's Go! Goodbye! Now let me find out how to switch the stream off. Okay, how to get... If we go to there... Where's the end stream button? Here it is. Goodbye, stream.
Goodbye, stream.
Bye!
And now, your extra goodbye, podcast fans... You get your extra goodbye. Cheerio.
We love you the most.
We do. Goodbye. The loyal fans.